What you are about to hear from Canada will serve as a wake-up call for us here in America. Stay tuned.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
When I was doing research for A Queer Thing Happened to America, which was intensive research over a period of more than 6 years, I looked at some of the things happening in England. I looked at some of the things happening elsewhere in Europe, some things happening in Australia, and a lot of what's happened in Canada. And it served to remind me if it could happen in some of these other countries, it could happen here in America. Today we're going to get some firsthand insights from Canada, be eye-opening, constructive, important listening. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. If you have a question for our special guest, whom I'll introduce in a moment, here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Many of you who are involved in pro-life activity and follow what's happening in the pro-life movement and in other key moral cultural issues today are very familiar with LifeSiteNews.com, a very important website, up to date, lots of good reporting, insights into what's happening, as well as just the facts and nothing but the facts. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the Line of Fire today John Henry Weston, who's the editor of LifeSite News. Thanks for joining us today, John Henry.
Great to be with you, Michael.
So first, tell our listeners that may not be familiar with your website what it's about, and what they can expect to find there.
LifeSiteNews.com is a website, international news website. We cover life, faith, family, culture issues from around the world. We have a heavy focus on North America, so the United States and Canada. And it's really been our experience on most of the issues that you guys are dealing with, that Canada and Europe seem to be further down the hill, as it were, from the United States. The United States still holding somewhat stronger on life and family. And we particularly want to point attention to your northern neighbor, Canada, which has really led the way down the hill and has been so detrimental. And hopefully Americans, and particularly Americans of faith, will look to what has happened here in Canada and learn what not to do and how to fight this this anti-life and anti-family juggernaut.
Now, our perceptive listeners would have heard the way that you said "been," which sounded more like "being," which would indicate that you probably live in Canada. So where are you based yourself?
I'm based near our national capital of Ottawa in Ontario, Canada.
All right. Have you lived there all your life in Canada?
Yes.
And then one just general question before we get to the break. Actually, two. What kind of traffic does your website get? And two, do you find that this is an explicit expression of Christian faith to deal with these issues?
First of all, we get approximately 1 million page views a month. We're very much read and looked at by leaders in the movement. We're also used in various publications around the world. We're translated into, we have a Spanish language version and a Portuguese version, and there's other languages that our materials get translated into. But, you know, just the website proper, it's 1 million page views a month. With regard to a Christian response, although for me personally, the best way to confront this cultural struggle is the Christian way, it is not limited to that, and the reason being is the truths that are followed or that make evident the way God created us are truths regardless. So that you find in these battles those, especially people of faith from all different Christian denominations, but also from the Jewish faith, from the Muslim faith, and so on, that are all given to truth.
Interesting. All right, so there are fundamental truths of life that God has put in the world that we stand for. All right, we're going to get specific when we come back. Friends, prepare to have your eyes open. I hope you're sitting down.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is great to be with you, friends. Today, it is Wednesday, which means we focus in particular on moral and cultural issues here on The Line of Fire. And my guest is John Henry Weston, based in Canada, but covering North America and the world. His website, lifesitenews.com, 866-34-TRUTH. If you have a question for our guest online, ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. That's Ask Dr. Brown. John Henry, before we look at the larger issue of, say, the church mentality in Canada as compared to America, because it is very different, let me just jump in with one particular case that you've been covering on your website, that of sportscaster Damien Goddard. What happened to him?
Well, as with many of the cases in Canada that have gone on over the last number of years, oftentimes people thought that when we passed same-sex marriage, it would be a done deal. Everything would be at peace. They would reach cultural peace because everything that the gay activists wanted is finally done. But as with, as you'll see in our later discussions, everything comes back to, oh, no, it's not done. This year, one of Canada's leading TV sports broadcasters was actually fired. But why? It was something very little. It was actually a Twitter post that got him fired. He was host of Connected Rogers Sportsnet, and that's, for Canadians, a big deal. And all that happened was there was a New York Rangers hockey star, Sean Avery, and he had backed a gay marriage ad, and he backed going against it, actually. And all the Twitter post said was that, "I completely and wholeheartedly support Todd Reynolds and his support for the traditional and true meaning of marriage." And that
right,
was
so,
it.
So the hockey player had said something in favor of same-sex marriage.
No,
then a hockey agent, Todd Reynolds, said that he opposed same-sex marriage. And then
exactly.
Damien Goddard said, "I agree. I stand for true marriage." So it was just a tweet, just a Twitter post
by a
sportscaster. And it happened to be a sports-related issue because there was a hockey player and a hockey agent who had interacted on this. So that's all he said. And he got fired for that?
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is this kind of intolerance is exactly what comes from legal same-sex marriage. Because, as I said, the idea that, oh, once it's same-sex marriage is done, we can now have cultural peace is absolutely false. The objective of same-sex marriage has really nothing to do with marriage. It has to do with a societal stamp of approval upon homosexual acts. And once same-sex marriage is in place, people notice, oh, there's still some opposition. Really and truly, at its most base level, the opposition is from within. People retain their consciences even when they practice all sorts of aberrant sexual behaviors. And they interpret the feeling from their conscience as coming from elsewhere. And so people into a lifestyle that goes against their consciences will seek to silence the voices of others who protest. And even if they protest in love, and even if they don't protest with words, but by their behavior of being faithful and recommending the good, they nonetheless get what turns out to be persecution in the end. And in the case of Goddard, that's the case.
All right. So what you're saying then, and I know that there are folks who listen to this broadcast who totally differ with me. I get emails from gay activists and gay listeners and, you know, the whole wide range. You're saying that if we say, okay, I'll tolerate you, they say that's not enough, you have to accept. We say, okay, I'll accept you, and they say that's not enough, you have to celebrate. The reason that they're looking for this affirmation from the outside is because they ultimately don't have it from the inside. And they misinterpret that as needing cultural acceptance, and it's the culture's fault that they have this tension on the inside. And you're claiming it's actually their conscience. I'm sure that's not the most popular position, but I fully understand where you're coming from. Absolutely.
It is not, but that's exactly the take. And you'll see that in a lot of different actions that take place, because even on the inside of the homosexual movement. They question each other, and then they wonder who's going where. It is a rancorous thing. And for those of, you know, your Christian listeners, there are some interesting biblical predictions of this kind of stuff. But I don't know if you want to go there. But there really is. From a perspective of the Bible, you can see that in Revelation, they talk about two end-time prophets who are, you know, speaking the words of truth. And when they're killed, people rejoice in the streets. Why? Because those two had tormented the consciences of people and are now dead. And this is, you know, clear from a Canadian perspective. The amount of intolerance and shutdown of people of faith since the passage of same-sex marriage, and even before, goes to show you it's nothing to do with happy coexistence, you believe your thing, I'll believe mine. It is forced acceptance of the quote-unquote good of homosexuality. Otherwise, you lose your job, you get fined, and you go to jail.
All right. Now, we'll look at some specific examples of that in a moment. I wanted to start with one to get people's attention so they realize how far it's gone. But the feeling I've had is that Haman, in the book of Esther, I'm not comparing every gay person to Haman, obviously, but the principle, that in the book of Esther, even though he was greatly promoted because there was this Jew Mordecai who wouldn't bow down to him, that's the thing that stuck in his craw. And he wasn't going to be satisfied until Mordecai bowed down. So we've seen it already in New York. We're on the air right now speaking to people all over the greater New York City area, that the passage of same-sex marriage came with certain religious exemptions, and already we're hearing that there are gay activists who are upset with these religious exemptions because it somehow codifies and allows bigotry, and those religious exemptions are going to have to go. So it's kind of an inevitable process. But I think one thing that Americans do not really understand is that the church culture in Canada is somewhat different than the church culture in America. I don't know if you'd call it more passive or just more blending in with the culture or less prominent numerically as far as evangelicals, but how would you compare and contrast the evangelical church culture that we're used to here in America with the church culture and mentality in Canada?
That is a difficulty for us, and that is because we do. I guess there's a Canadian kind of mindset that thinks of itself as more friendly, less confrontational. But the way that plays out in terms of religion and faith is not really loving. And that's because it's a very interesting thing. When, and the scriptures talk about this all the time, if you really love someone, if a father loves his child, then he disciplines that child. And in fact talks about it as hate for a child if they're not disciplined. Well, that's also true when it comes to spiritual fatherhood and the flock or the sheep or the public that our Lord asks our religious leaders to look out for and to bring to him. And so if we're not giving the truth of Christianity, the truth that God stamped in our own bodies of human sexuality and the beauty that it's made for, then we're really hurting people. And so we saw in Canada an amazing lack of focus on the part of religious leadership toward these issues when they were, and as they have been in the forefront for over the past decade. We passed same-sex marriage in 2005. And in order to get religious leadership to actually address the issue, it was like pulling teeth. You had this going on day to day in the culture. We had it started, you know, in the early 2000s with mayors being forced out of their mayorships, or at least being fined heavily for being unwilling to proclaim Gay Pride Day because they said they were Christians. Mm. And it went on and on from there. Yet the religious leadership didn't want to talk about homosexuality. It was impolite. They would, and this is what they did do. They talked about marriage. Marriage is so wonderful. Marriage is a great thing. Let's all get on board with heterosexual marriage. Look how wonderful you can have a couple together and husband and wife and so on and so forth. Great campaign. Great campaign to fight divorce or to fight, you know, having no children, those kinds of things. But this issue had to do with acceptance of homosexual acts. And in fact, it was interesting because while the evangelical church here is much smaller, in Canada, the Catholic Church is a big force. And I actually sat on an advisory council for the Ontario Bishops' Conference. They gathered a number of leaders together and asked, you know, how do we confront same-sex marriage, which we knew in 2003 and 2004 was really around the corner.
All right, hey, I'm just going to jump in, and you'll answer that question, how they responded to that back then, because these are very important issues. Friends, here in America, we just look a little bit into the mirror pointing north, and there's a lot we need to see, a lot we can learn from. We'll come back, talk to John Henry Weston about very specific examples of loss of religious liberties and jobs in Canada in recent years over these very issues.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today, friends. Look, for many years, people would tell me, this will never happen. This would never happen in America. No, this would never happen. Then it happens. Like, well, it's good that it's fine that it happened. I had people for years telling me, listen, no one's trying to put you in the closet. No one's trying to silence you. And then more recently, well, bigots like you belong in the closet. We can learn a lot from seeing what's happened to the north, our neighbors in Canada. Yes, different culture, but similar, and similar principles we're dealing with as far as the church's influence in society and the real threat to religious liberties over gay activist issues. 866-34-TRUTH. I'll get to some calls in a little while, but I want to devote as much time as I can to our guest, John Henry Weston, who's the editor of LifeSiteNews.com. That's S-I-T-E, LifeSiteNews.com, based in Canada. So before the break, you were telling us about meeting with Catholic leaders. Same-sex marriage vote is approaching in Canada some years back. And what came out of this meeting?
Well, at the meeting, we begged, we being myself and Steve Jelcevic, the leaders and founders of LifeSite News, we actually begged the bishops to please take on the issue of homosexuality, how the behavior is harmful for people. It actually harms them physically. It harms them emotionally. And we know that. I mean, the science is there for that. But we know as Christians it harms them spiritually. And there had already been a dearth, a total lack of saying this from the pulpit across Canada, both in all Christian denominations. And we needed to bring this teaching back in a big way. And it's because of the lack of this teaching that the whole of the public was already almost majority in support of same-sex marriage. Why not? Because they hadn't heard it from their pulpits in over 20 years. But here we were asking and basically saying, look, this is the reason why is because this is all about a stamp of approval on homosexual acts. And we have to give the teaching of love that the reason why we're saying that is wrong is because we care about these individuals. They're our brothers and sisters in Christ, and we care about them enough to say it's harmful. This behavior is going to hurt you, and most of all, spiritually. And there were other people advising at that table. Some of those people, in fact, did not accept the Christian teaching on homosexuality. But they said, oh, no, we should never talk about that politically. That's wrong, and we really need to talk about marriage and how wonderful it is. In 80 interventions between that date and the time same-sex marriage was passed, 80 interventions, the Catholic bishops of Ontario stuck to the talking points of how marriage was a wonderful thing, and not one of them talked about how homosexual acts are immoral and harmful for you. We care enough about you. We love you enough to tell you that and tell you that they're harmful spiritually as well.
So it was considered to be poor strategy to do that, or did it seem just too controversial? And again, you can't judge motives, but from what you heard, was it that this is bad strategy, we've tried the talking points and it won't work, or was it a matter of this going to be too much controversy and we're not willing to take the controversy?
I would say it had to be the latter because they didn't try it. And that's the point. It wasn't tried, and what was tried didn't work in spades. We passed same-sex marriage in 2005. 2004, it came across through some court orders, and then in 2005 passed it through the legislature. But the lack of teaching on the matter and the total absence of anybody standing up, really, and saying the message of love, which is the only message that can answer this. The scriptures tell us, You can speak with words of men and angels, but if you have not love, you have nothing. And it's so true in this debate, where the other side basically says, hey, we're all about love. What does the love between me and my partner hurt you in your marriage to your partner? And the only answer is the answer of love, because otherwise we look like we are uncaring and unloving. And really, the truth behind everything that Christianity holds on the teachings of sexuality is all based on true love.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's what we have to model, live out, demonstrate. Hey, just one thing very quickly, tying back to something you said about mayors. I just want to get this question to you, but all right, hang on. All right, boys, somehow I just disconnected John Henry there, so if you can reconnect him, I think I realize what happened, but somehow disconnected our guest. My apologies. All right, grab him back on the line, Hal or Joey. Ray in Silver Spring, Maryland, you had a question, I believe, for John Henry, so we'll get him back on to hear your question, but go ahead and ask it, sir.
Yeah, did I hear him right that mayors were relieved of their office as mayor because they refused to participate in gay pride events?
Right. He said that they lost their job. So let's ask exactly what he was saying. Did he mean they didn't get reelected? Did he mean that somebody forced them out? So that was an explicit statement. I heard the same thing you did. So after disconnecting our guest, I've just got to repeat the question to him. We're trying to get him back on the line. So hang in there, Ray, okay? Thank you for raising the question. Now, are you asking it, saying there's no way this could have happened, or just wanting clarification?
I want to know, because in the Bible, this is a direct repeat of Daniel chapter 3, where the entire world was forced to bow down to an idol, and when three men said, no, we want no part of it, they weren't interfering with the rest of the world that chose to bow down to the idol. They just said, as individuals, we want no part of it. But King Nebuchadnezzar said, no, listen, I was once told, when I was 15 years old, the spring of 1980, I had a private conference with a lady that ran the private school. And she said, and the school got their reputation as being a refuge for the individual. But I said, I didn't think the assistant teacher was a real man. I used that word because he was an outspoken, professed homosexual. And she said, dear, you cannot, she said to me, she said, dear, you cannot continue to come to this school and think that way. And I said, okay, I'll keep my mouth shut. And she said, no, that won't do, because this school is designed to bring out the human being in you. By the way, that was a Quaker school.
Wow. All right. Hang on. Let me get an answer from our guests here. Appreciate hearing Ray's story. Hey, John Henry, not sure what happened there, but my apologies for disconnecting you. All right, we've just got a minute before the break, but one of our callers wanted to just have clarified that you said mayors had lost their jobs for not participating or sponsoring gay pride events. What specifically were you referring to in saying that?
During the early 2000s, there was a bunch of mayors across the country who refused to proclaim Gay Pride Day. They were taken to what we have here, an extrajudicial system called the Human Rights Tribunal, and they were tried and found guilty of violating on discrimination based on sexual orientation. So they were thereafter fined, usually in the neighborhood of $5,000 per complaint, but the court costs usually amounted to somewhere around $75,000. So they were fined and then forced to either proclaim Gay Pride Day themselves or have their offices do it. So they did that. Some of the mayors refused and had their offices issue the proclamations and so on, but they were forced to by the court. We've had loss of job over this issue many times, but I can give you an example. For instance, there's a Christian.
All right, let's get an example when we come back. So thank you, sir, for staying a few extra minutes with us. So this is, friends, what is happening in Canada. Is it an example of what could be coming our way here in America? Of course. A lot of it's already here, but of course.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
As many of you know who've listened to the broadcast, or in particular if you've read my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, I've used examples of what's happened in Canada to say, look, this has already happened there. There was a time when it would have seemed impossible, but it has happened there. It is happening there. And we need to wake up and learn here in America. We've got a guest based in Canada, a native Canadian, the editor of LifeSiteNews.com. So on top of these issues, and issues having to do with the larger questions of life, abortion, marriage, things like that. But of course, the gay activist issue is a major one in Canada. 866-34-TRUTH, if you have a question for our guest, John Henry Weston. Thanks so much for taking a few extra minutes to stay with us today.
No problem.
All right, so look, people care when it actually affects their livelihood. When someone is literally fired from a job, or someone is put under some type of ban of free speech, or values are now going to be imposed on private schools by the government, contrary to the moral and religious values of those schools. All these things are happening in Canada. So let's talk about some of these. And again, same-sex marriage has been legal across the land for 6 years now, and you're saying rather than that bringing a peaceful coexistence, it has brought basically a crackdown on all those who don't accept, embrace, even celebrate this. So give me some of the most glaring examples that you can, that not what might be coming, but what's already happened.
Okay. One of them is a Toronto printer by the name of Scott Brockie. He was a Christian man, an evangelical man, and he had a printing shop, and in Toronto there's many, many, hundreds, if not thousands of printing shops, and a homosexual activist group came in and asked him to print their material. Now, he's being a good Christian man, he said to them, look, fellas, I'm a Christian, I can't print that, but you can go, probably it was like next door, likely, but probably somewhere in the neighborhood, like down the street, and they'd be happy to do that for you. He ended up getting sued. Now, Scott Brockie is a family man. In the court case, he ended up losing his home, and he was still under trial. Eventually, in the court, he got out of it. But the thing is, he was so hampered, he was so driven to almost bankruptcy. There's another case of a Christian teacher in British Columbia who took issue in newspapers outside of school time, not mentioning that he was a teacher, but talking about homosexuality in the newspapers when they raised the issue about it. And because he wrote to the newspapers, he was fired from his school and dropped as a teacher. And
all he did was write in the newspaper. He didn't threaten anybody.
No, of course not.
He just wrote in the newspaper his differences, and it was civil enough for the newspaper to print it, I guess.
That's right. Absolutely. He was discussing his outside of teaching time and everything like that, discussing his own Christian views, and that got him out of the school system. And not only that, the BC, the British Columbia College of Teachers, pursued him for many, many years. His problem started in 2001, and the charges were only dropped in 2009 by the BC Teachers Union. And he quit last year as a teacher. So after he finally quit off the, as a teacher and relieved them of having ever to fulfill his position, they finally dropped the charges against him. We had so many incidents, and it's hard for me to go through them here, but let me encourage your readers to look up some of these guys, to look up Chris Kempling, that's the teacher in BC, yep, to look up Scott Brockie, the Toronto printer. There's so many other cases. I'll run through a few of them and encourage your listeners to go to LifeSiteNews.com and look them up. We have a search engine you can do that with.
All right, we'll grab the names when we come back, and then I want to get a call from Roger in Westchester, important point to make. And then, John Henry, one last thing, because I don't want to abuse your time today. I want our listeners to know what Catholic bishops have been told must be put in Catholic schools. Uh-huh. Stay with us.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, the clock is ticking. I want to try to cover some more ground with my guest, John Henry Weston. Roger in Westchester, hang on. I want to get to your point and question. 866-34-TRUTH if you'd like to interact with our guest, John Henry Weston, editor of LifeSiteNews.com. Of course, some of the examples from Canada, Chris Kempling and others, I have in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, in the chapter Big Brother is Watching, and he really is gay. But maybe just give a few more names of some people where they can search LifeSiteNews.com and find out more of the stories of people who've lost their jobs or been through years and years of court cases over simply publicly differing with homosexual practice.
Two examples where Catholic leaders were taken to the Human Rights Tribunals. One, Bishop Fred Henry in Calgary, for preaching the truth on homosexuality according to the Catholic Church, was dragged before the Human Rights Tribunals in a case that took many years. Also, Bishop Nicholas DeAngelis in Peterborough, Ontario, was taken to court by a homosexual for refusing to allow a homosexual and his gay partner to serve on the altar inside a Catholic church. Another Catholic organization called the Knights of Columbus in British Columbia was sued at the Human Rights Tribunal for refusing to allow the celebration after a same-sex wedding ceremony. There was also a case of a student, Mark Hall, who was a student in a Catholic school who wanted to bring his gay date to the prom, an older man. His principal refused, and not only did the court say that they couldn't refuse, they also refused the school the opportunity to shut down the prom to stop this travesty from taking place. So God. Those are just a smattering of a few of the items that have happened in Canada.
All right. And these are just factual things. Look into them. Get the data, the details. Let me just get to Roger's comment here. Hang on there. Roger in Westchester, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Okay. Before the same-sex marriage law was able to be passed in the New York State Senate, there was a couple of Republicans who wanted protection for churches that didn't want to marry these people. And there was a delay in the law becoming law until that was granted them. So that provision is there, that, like, you know, they can refuse to marry a couple in their church.
Yeah, the religious exemption is there. Of course, it was compromised by the Republicans because they still voted for something that their constituents were against. But
right.
the bigger issue is that's already coming under attack. And the people the people who would hold to that view are now, by the law, considered to be bigots because they're not willing to go with what the law says. So the religious exemption was just a cop-out for some of the Republicans, number one. And number two, that's going to come under fire. And number three, it already makes people look bad because, hey, this is the law now, and you're not participating with the law. But just trust me, Roger, there's going to be constant attack over the religious exemption issue in coming days.
But there was a demonstration the other day of waivers.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And some Hasidic Jews, too, that they wanted to be put to a vote.
Right. Let the people vote. Right. And the only way to do that is to get new people elected in 2012. Yeah, of course, we've talked about that on the air. But thanks for weighing in, Roger. Appreciate that. John Henry, when we met in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, you told me something that is now being imposed on Catholic bishops have been told they have to have something in their Catholic schools. Right? We're not talking about public schools, but Catholic schools. Could you enlighten our listeners on that?
Absolutely. And just to what your caller was saying, it's just that. As soon as they promise something, you know that's their next target. We got promised civil unions said, oh, it will never lead to gay marriage. 3 years later, we had gay marriage. And in that gay marriage bill, they said there wouldn't be forced on religion, and we got that. What we had in the last number of weeks in Canada is that the Premier of Ontario, the province of Ontario, has mandated that all schools across Ontario, and in Ontario we have Catholic schools as well as public schools, which at one time were Protestant schools, but are no longer so. They're just public. They must all provide for these groups, anti-homophobia bullying groups. And as we know, those groups tend toward promotion of homosexuality. And you'd think, though, that in Catholic schools they would have an exemption. But, oh, no, there is no exemption allowed whatsoever for Catholic schools either. In the public school board, it's very interesting, the Toronto Public School Board, and remember, most Christians, evangelical Christians, have their children in public schools. And what have they been told? They've been told not only that homosexual acts and homosexuality will be normalized throughout the school curriculum and taught specifically, but parents have been told they are not permitted to exempt their children from such classes.
Of course, and I've got a caller on with a question from Boston right now. In fact, the courts ruled that it's more important, courts in the States, to teach diversity, quote, in other words, homosexual activism, than to honor the request of the parents. Let's just get clarification, a legal question here from Boston. Brian, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, thanks so much. My apologies in advance if my question is in any way redundant. I just kind of started to catch your show, and I was calling in, I guess, as Roger was asking his question, so I didn't really catch the gist of it, just the tail answer, or the tail end of the answer to it. But my question is, what kind of comparability are there in the laws in Canada, you know, to the extent that you can speak on this, relative to the laws in the United States? Because, you know, when I'm just thinking of the examples, obviously, you know, what you guys are expressing is of grave concern to the extent that, you know, the U.S. government would start to take similar actions that it sounds mm-hmm. like.
So just the larger legal framework, how much does the Canadian government have the ability to enforce things on their populace? So as you observe Canada and the United States, John Henry, how would you say the laws are similar or contrasting in terms of what the government can and can't do?
In Canada here, we passed a hate crime law before our same-sex marriage law. So we have that on the books where you don't yet there. In addition to that, we have this extrajudicial process called the Human Rights Tribunals, which and Human Rights Court, which is set up outside of a normal court system, and it deals with the Human Rights Act, which stipulates that there shall be no discrimination based on sexual orientation. And so it's through that tool, in the main, that all these lawsuits and prosecutions have happened. We haven't yet seen a prosecution under the hate crime law. The hate crime was specifically to deal with criminal acts and so on. So through this extrajudicial process is what most of it has come in on. In the United States, though, you see different court cases popping up, which tend in the same direction.
And then different individual states, many of them will say, yes, that there is no discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So you'd have the same thing just with the statewide decisions there. Hey, one last question. We've got 2 minutes before this last break, so thanks for staying on Extra with us. But if you were giving your last words to our listeners here in America, we have listeners in Canada too, but the vast, vast majority in America, what would you say to Christians in America based on your experience in Canada?
Get your leaders to raise this long-ignored issue from the pulpit. Your spiritual leaders are really where the power lies. Yes, there's room for political action and everything else, but if we don't recapture the heart of America to bring them back to the truth of the love Christians have for those people who practice homosexual acts, and we know it's bad for them, that's the whole reason why we're saying this. If we don't recapture that, we're going to lose our own people, because they're believing the lies about, hey, it's love between you and I, and what's the difference? Most of America, most of Christian America, is believing the lie right now. And so we have to recapture our faith when it comes to human sexuality, and that's the key.
But then someone will surely say, but that will hurt us in our outreach. If we get political, that will hurt us in our outreach. I just dealt with a pastor about that online earlier today. What would you say to that?
How can it be political to want to spread the love of Christ in his truth about eternal salvation? And if they make every point of our interaction with the culture to bring the culture to Christ a political point, are we then going to abandon at every aspect?
Yeah, absolutely well said. I appreciate your tone, spirit, and what you're doing. Of course, this is one of quite a number of issues that you deal with. So just tell our listeners again, if they go to LifeSite News, what will they find?
LifeSiteNews.com is basically a window to the culture wars on life, family, and culture throughout the world. you'll see the perspective from North America, Europe, Africa, Asia, and everywhere, and how this battle is raging throughout the world. Different fronts, different things, different places, but also the very powerful words from leaders, both political and religious, who are speaking on these issues and making a difference.
Hey, well, God bless you for your efforts, and God bless you for the love in which you present things. LifeSite News, S-I-T-E, LifeSiteNews.com. John Henry, thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Michael. God bless you.
All right, God bless. All right, friends, we come back. I want to play a clip from Governor Cuomo, and we'll take your calls as well, 866-34-TRUTH. Friends, wake up call once again. But God's with us. Let's stand up. Let's do the right thing.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire. Great to be with you, 866-34-TRUTH. We've been talking with John Henry Weston, editor of LifeSiteNews.com, based in Canada, but covering North America and the world with relevant issues on what we refer to as the culture wars. And again, based on what's happening in Canada and what has happened in the last decade plus in Canada, another reminder, wake-up call for us here in America. If you don't have my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, yet, by all means, get it. You'll find tremendous documentation dealing with all these issues and ultimately from that same spirit of love. Thomas in Providence, Rhode Island, thanks for calling today.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, I talked to you a while back off the air. I don't know if you remember, I was telling you about my wife who has a young man that she works with, and when he turns 18, he wanted to have a sex change operation. I don't know if that you remember
that.
I do
remember that.
Yeah, well, I found out a little more information. The reason why he wants to have this operation is because he wants to become a lesbian. See, the thing about it is that the way that I'm looking at it is the reason that, you know, people who claim this agenda feel so confident that they can redefine what marriage is or what it means to be married is because they've actually redefined what it means to be a homosexual without being forced to actually lay out a definition for it. You know, I have this conversation with someone who says, you know, well, I'm born like that. Well, my response is, born like what? What do you mean by that when you say you're born a homosexual? The majority of men who claim to be a homosexual have no desire to be a woman, and vice versa, along with the women. They don't have a desire to become a man.
Right. And they would just say that they're same-sex attracted, just like you're attracted to the opposite sex, they're attracted to the same sex.
Right. So when they're forced to be able to lay out a definition, especially when you lay, you know, you put everything into one group, gay, lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual, right? What does that mean? You give a definition. We'll meet you where you are, right? And we want you to lay out to define it. You're always going to come back to a sexual preference. Well, as far as I've known, you know, sexual preference growing up has always meant, you know, I prefer brunettes, or I prefer blondes, or I like them tall, or I like them short. Well, if that's the situation, then that's the category that it should fall into.
Thomas, if someone said to you, well, then you have a sexual preference for people of the opposite sex, would you accept that?
Well, I would meet them where they are, and I would tell them to actually define what they mean by that. When you say that I have a,
because they would say they're the same as you, but just attracted to the same sex versus the opposite sex. But, you know, I don't want to miss one important thing, though, Thomas, because I'm just looking at the clock here, so sorry to jump in. You mentioned the young man that your wife works with and was reaching out to, who wanted to have sex change surgery, so he felt like a girl trapped in a boy's body. But he's obviously attracted to women because he wants to become a lesbian. Would be like Chastity Bono said that she first thought she was a lesbian because she was attracted to women, then realized that she was a heterosexual man in a woman's body. Here you've got a young man, according to what your wife understands, who says he's attracted to women, so then we would say he's heterosexual, but he says no, he's a lesbian woman trapped inside a man's body, so he wants to have sex change surgery to identify as a woman and then be with women.
Be a lesbian.
Right, so you hear that, and you say, this kid needs help on the inside.
That's my point.
Right, right. And so that's why I'm just diving in on that. And people need to look. This is not every person out there, but there. I've read of plenty of cases of people who had sex change surgery, and now they are like homosexuals in the new body or the mutilated body or the changed body. You know, it's and there's this is not God's best. This is not God's plan. This is not the best for these people.
No.
And yet, when we say, "Look, let's help you from the inside out," you're attracted to the opposite sex. That works. Let's help you accept the fact that you're actually a male in a male body and try to work through the root issues that are causing you this pain. No, we're bigots if we do that, and society will now celebrate this person having their sexual organs mutilated, then having to be on hormones for the rest of their life, and then never fully being a woman so that they can engage in lesbian relationships. Surely that is not the best for that individual.
If I can make this point very quickly, I know you're out of time, Dr. Brown. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. My point is that we're allowing them to redefine what it means to be a homosexual as either another species of human being or another race.
It gets in the same class because it becomes a civil rights issue equivalent with being black or Hispanic.
Then you have to prove that being a homosexual is another race, or you have to prove that we actually have a new species of human being.
Yeah, I mean, their argument would be,
national discussion and force them to actually have this, come out and say exactly what it is, because you're always going to go back to, it's a sexual preference, and then it's a choice.
I understand. All right, hey, I got to run, Thomas, but
thanks for
weighing in. I fully understand that no one would say, hey, I just woke up one day and chose to be homosexual. They may choose to come out or act on it. But the idea that this is innate and immutable and that behavior can be equivalent to skin color or ethnicity, no. And it's love that compels us to tell the truth. Hey, it's a love that's strong enough that even if people hate us and resist us and cast us out and mock us, we will tell the truth. I don't have time to play this clip. It's a minute long. Maybe we'll do it on Friday because it won't fit tomorrow. From Governor Cuomo in New York, but I think you need to hear it. And then the question is, how do we respond to it? So we'll play that a couple days from now will be the plan. Got an important show tomorrow. Going to open up the scriptures, messianic prophecy, ask the question, does the Bible actually predict the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, that the Messiah would come twice? And I'm pleased to say we got a call yesterday from a Jewish woman seeking faith, on her way to faith in Yeshua, but not quite there, but in real need. We've already had a Jewish believing sister in touch with her today, setting up a time to get together, bring her a Bible, and reach out to her. So those that were listening yesterday, we already made a great connection on that. And behind the scenes, hey, we're having lots of great interaction with people who differ with us on a daily basis. If you believe in what we're doing, would you pray for us? Would you pray for strength, for grace, for finances, for favor? To reach more and more people, would you tell a friend about the broadcast? Don't assume that they know about it. And would you consider standing with us, a one-time gift, or better still, becoming a monthly torchbearer? All of our monthly torchbearers, you get a new CD sent to you every month. You get 15% discount on our online bookstore and free access to all of our online classes. So we bless you many times over as you stand with us. If you can stand with us, give us a call, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. If you can stand with us, that would be awesome. My bottom line, it is a time for courage. It's a time for introspection, to look at our own hearts, to look at our own lives, to make sure that we are clean, that we are right, that we are honoring the Lord. And then to put down fear of reputation, fear of well-being, and instead to fear the Lord and to stand up for what is right.
Change the world.
Should there be a death penalty or life imprisonment without parole for certain crimes in Norway, as we have here in America? Or are we Americans the last ones to teach Norway about justice?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I'm going to open up a difficult subject, somewhat of a can of worms, but an important one, one that's going to cause us to do some reflecting here as Americans as well. It's Wednesday. Our focus on Wednesdays on the Line of Fire, especially on moral and cultural issues. And in light of the massacre in Norway and some of the questions about guns and the penal system there, I want to get your insight. I want to get your help. All right. So prepare to call. 866-34-TRUTH is the number. 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Okay. Allow me to lay this out first before you weigh in with your thoughts. Okay. We, from America, looking at what's happened in Norway, of course, it's ghastly. It's horrific. It's beyond words in terms of the loss of life and the trauma to the country. But it's very hard for us to relate to that as Americans in terms of how deeply it has traumatized Norway and the impact of it, because this is the most horrific event like this in their country since World War II. Over 60 years without anything like this ever happening. All right? So I certainly can't put myself in the shoes of the Norwegian people, even though I have friends and colleagues in Norway. I absolutely can't imagine I can put myself in their shoes. And in terms of numbers, in terms of impact on the country, numerically compared to America, because America is more than 60 times the population of Norway, you're talking about more people than those who died on 9/11 if we adjusted it per person. We're talking about more people dying in Norway with the 76 that are accounted for as dead than all those that were killed on 9/11. It would be the equivalent of like 5,000 Americans or something like that. So it's devastating. But then we hear that if he was simply charged, the murderer was simply charged according to acts of terror, he would receive 21 years in jail. 21 years in jail. Not for each person he killed, but total. Now, there's a possibility he could be sentenced under another law that would give him 30 years in jail. And then if the judges felt that he would still be a menace to society, he could be kept in jail years longer. But those are a number of ifs. People have been outraged saying, wait a second, that's 100 days in jail for every person he murdered. How in the world can that be? And others saying there needs to be a death penalty in Norway, at least life imprisonment without the possibility of parole or a death penalty. And then others have said, look, if you just had other people carrying guns in Norway, if you just had a few people at the youth camp there with concealed weapons, if that was the case, then this guy would have been shot down instantly. He would have killed a few people, and he would have been taken out, and that would have been the end of it. And there should just be more guns available. But who are we in America to lecture the Norwegians about this? Do you follow me? I want to hear your opinion on this, about the penal system, about the sentencing in Norway. Is it an outrage to say that he might get 21 years, might be walking free again? You know, some of these other kids will be in their late 30s. Those maybe some that were wounded, and he'll be walking free again. What, in his 50s? Isn't that a complete outrage? But on the other hand, we've got tons of people in jail here in America, and capital punishment, life imprisonment, and massive crime problems, and guns galore, and massive violence. What do you think? Who can teach whom? We'll be back.
single flame. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So who's got the right approach to this, the Norwegians or the Americans? 866-34-TRUTH. How do you feel, first, about the possibility that the murderer could potentially, just according to the current system, receive 21 years in prison for murdering in cold blood 76 people, at least 76 people, and wounding I don't know how many others, and then traumatizing for years or for life, I don't know how many others, but murdering in cold blood 76 human beings, the potential of just getting 21 years in jail. How does that strike you? Could it be that this type of tolerant, accepting mentality in Norway, without the heavy penal system and without a death penalty like we still have here in America, could it be that that has helped produce a culture where you have far less murders per capita than here in America, where you have far less violent crime per capita than here in America, where even some police don't carry guns? Could it be possible that this is part of the mindset that has helped them? Or are there two completely different issues here? Is one issue a certain Danish mentality and a Danish culture, and one that is different than American culture in terms of having a history of violence the way we do, and it's not a gun culture the way ours is? Or is there something larger here? And what about the gun issue? What about the gun issue? If you've listened to this broadcast for a day or for a year or for 3 years, you'll know that gun control is not one of the subjects I bring up. You'll notice, for example, that with the massively important discussions going on day in, day out with Congress and our president about the budget crisis and the economy, you don't hear me talking about it. It's not that it's not important. It's just not an area of expertise for me and an area that the Lord has burdened me to focus on. Others are doing that and doing a fine job on it, so I leave that to them, and I simply seek to live wisely and to be generous and to follow biblical principles in my own life and ministry and those that we touch. Same thing with gun control. I'm not a gun person. I'm just not a gun person. Look, I'm a Jew born in New York City and raised on Long Island. I did not come from a hunting family. I did not come from a camping family, for that matter. I didn't come from a fishing family, for that matter. On a couple of occasions, I went out fishing with people, and I did not like it at all. I didn't like catching a fish. I didn't like seeing the fish laying there. I'm just telling you, I didn't like that. No, I'm not a fish eater either, but that's not because of vegetarian purposes. Just I didn't grow up eating a lot of fish or really took a liking to fish taste. But let alone being like a hunter and going out with a gun and shooting it, I believe on two occasions I've held an actual gun in my hand and shot it in settings, of course, where it was, you know, permissible to do that. Other than that, it's just, you know, playing games as a kid with guns or some video games kid or something like that. So my point is, I'm not one of these, you know, National Rifle Association guys, okay? But people have said, look, in Norway, if you just had a few more people carrying weapons, legally carrying weapons, if it wasn't so difficult to get them, or if people just realized you may have nutcases out there, you may have violent people out there, and therefore should carry guns. And if someone else had a gun or a couple of people had guns, this guy would have been shot instantly. I mean, he starts shooting a few people with a little training or background, you know, find where he is and shoot back, and that's it. Others would say, come on, that's the last thing Norway needs. That's the last thing Norway needs. After all, look at America. Look at the violence in America. Look at the bloodshed in America. Look at how many people have guns. Look at how many people are getting killed with guns. Look at the constant casualties here in America. That's the last thing Norway needs. So what's your take on that? 866-34-TRUTH to weigh in about the penal system, about whether it's an outrage for there to be a 21-year sentence for a man who kills 76 people, or if the Americans are the last ones to lecture people about penal systems. And then what about guns? Does Norway need more guns, more people having guns, more of a security mentality? Hey, you could go one of two ways, and people react like this in their general lives. You can have a situation that causes you to go one direction or the other. The people of Norway can be so traumatized by this and say this will never happen again that they can say we need to have security. If we ever have a youth camp like this again, there have to be armed guards there. And we need all of our police to be carrying weapons. And we need to have civilians that are trained and that are carrying weapons, and that we just need to make sure nothing like this can ever happen again. And we change our whole culture over it, which it seems the Norwegian people are absolutely not saying from the little I've been able to glean and read. Or you could say, somebody like this is not going to get us off course. We've lived the way we've lived for decades now. We've lived with a certain mindset for decades, if not longer. We have conducted ourselves a certain way. I was reading a quote, I believe, from the Prime Minister saying that what you're going to see in Norway is more democracy, not less. So rather than saying that some madman, murderer, terrorist is going to change us, is going to affect our culture, we're going to continue to be who we are. Just wondering what your take on this is. As I look, the last thing I want to do is look at this just through the eyes of an American. However, I do want to look at this as much as I can through the eyes of a follower of Jesus, which raises the larger question. Is it right as a follower of Jesus to ever opt for capital punishment? Is it right as a follower of Jesus to ever opt for the death penalty in certain cases? Or at the least, life in prison without parole? It's my own opinion that, of course, people can be forgiven by God, and they can come to know him personally through repentance and faith and through the blood of Jesus, and they can be with him forever, and they can be loved by God. But that, of course, does not change the sentence of justice. And it's my opinion. So I'm going to weigh in first, since it's my broadcast. Sometimes I won't weigh in, and I'll let others weigh in, and either I don't have a fixed opinion, and I'll listen to everybody and give you my thoughts at the end. Most of the time, I have a clear fixed opinion before we start. I'm always willing to be influenced by callers and have my position nuanced or changed. But sometimes I'll weigh in at the end. Sometimes I'll weigh in at the beginning. So let me weigh in here and say this, all right? Based on Genesis 9, which says that whoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, because in the image of God he was created. Based on that, I understand that there is a special value on human life as compared to animal life, and that human beings, as uniquely created in God's image and uniquely bearing his image, therefore must be treated with certain respect and dignity. So if you shed human blood, in that sense, you are shedding the blood of the highest of God's creation, the only beings on this earth, uniquely made in his image. And therefore, if you take a life, your own life is forfeit. So for me, in order to enhance and esteem human life, and to say, no, it's not just like animal life, this is something sacred, even for a sinful human being, still sacred, that if you take another life, you forfeit your own. Now, I have friends who say capital punishment should never be practiced because we don't have a perfect justice system. In other words, we may get the right person 9 out of 10 times, but we forget the wrong person 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 100. You don't put the wrong person to death. Whatever happens, that would be the most horrific thing of all for the government, for the law, for the courts, to apprehend the wrong person. And having apprehended the wrong person, then to put the wrong person to death, that's unthinkable. Therefore, they would say no capital punishment. I am also keen to the fact that God extends mercy, and that we need to extend mercy to the individual, and allowing them to live is a possible way to do that. I know people who are hardcore murderers. I mean, lost, sinful murderers, even serial murderers who have come to genuine, wonderful faith in prison. The one that I'm most familiar with being one that our ministry did a documentary about a few years back, from Son of Sam to Son of Hope, the story of David Berkowitz. Those that knew him as a serial killer said it's impossible, he's not really converted, no one like that ever changes. Those who know him as a believer said, I can't believe he ever killed anyone, he's the most gentle, gracious person I've ever met. So as I think about it, at the very least then, the penalty would be life in prison without the possibility of parole. In other words, you take a life, you lose your life. If willingly, in cold blood, someone takes another life, then they forfeit their own. And that is not hardness, harshness. That is recognizing the dignity of human life. What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. Christian view. Can there be Christian view in death penalty? It's a larger question I've asked, but asking it specifically in the context of what's happened in Norway. Again, we want to be praying for the people of Norway, an extraordinary trauma with the mass murder. I know human nature. I know I'm a human being. I know all of us have thought things we can't believe we thought, and at times in our lives did things we can't believe we did. But I just don't understand how a human being can just go in cold blood and just start shooting young people. Yeah, I just don't shooting anybody. I'm just shooting young people and then just keep it up. And then when the police say stop, he just stops and then he explains what he did. And look, you have, say, a Nazi Germany where you have so many people just willingly, openly just sending people to their death or throwing Jewish babies and others into burning pits with fire. Just reminds me again that we need a Savior. Reminds me again that we are a fallen people and we need a Savior. Okay, so my questions. In Norway, should there be harsher penalties right now? The basic law would say 21 years for all these murders, and the possibility of adding on some other years, or a possibility if the judges still feel he's a threat to others that he couldn't walk the streets again, to keep adding more years on. But what if he's not a threat? Doesn't justice require something different than that? And is the solution harsher penalties? Or maybe the Norwegians have something to teach us because our culture is much more violent. We have much harsher penalties. 866-34-TRUTH online, askdrbrown.org. All right, to the phones. Duke in St. Petersburg, Florida. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. This is the Duke of Earl
from
St. Petersburg. I used to go to Fillmore East, by the way back when, so I like your music.
I went there before I was saved also. It didn't have a positive impact on me, but in those days, that was my home away from home. But, what's on your mind, Duke?
Listen, publicly execute the rodent. He should be publicly executed. This whole feminized approach to criminal justice is the reason why we have the havoc we have today. Ecclesiastes 8:11. Because sentence on an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the hearts of the sons of men, it's fully set in them to do evil continually. This whole stupid feminized whorehouse, Ivy League, feminized approach to criminal justice is the reason why this country is infested with murderers and why it's now out of control. That's the problem. Ecclesiastes, St. Paul, Romans 13:4, Acts 25:11. We should have these people executed, but the government is supposed to do that. That's the whole origin of government. We don't do this, and this is why the honest citizen is behind his doors at night afraid while these criminals, these vicious criminals, are strutting up and down the streets at night. Because we've allowed the lawlessness law schools and the blasphemous American Bar Association to have this travesty that's going on in the world today. So it's not a problem. Do the job, have the rodent executed publicly, and then the drooling creeps on the street corner will see this is what happens. This is the consequence. You're not going to get away with it. It's the same thing when John Lennon was killed in New York City. That rodent should have been publicly executed. Did that.
All right. Hey, Duke, thank you for weighing in. What do you think about what Duke had to say? He certainly said it, didn't he? Harry in Sefner, Florida. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Dr. Graham.
Hello, Harry.
Thank you for taking my call. I'll try and be a little calmer.
All right.
It was horrible what happened. And what really gets me is that whenever something like that happens, you know, the national media or even the local media, they'll say, oh, yeah, by the way, in Norway, you know, 93 children were killed. And, you know, even people swimming, he shot these people. And then they go right on to the Rays game, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Instead of praying for people, but the society, you know, anyway. But I just wanted to share this with you and see, get your opinion. I don't know, it was a year or two ago, and I don't have the name of the church, but it was out west. Anyway, this guy goes into the church, and apparently they were, you know, letting out, and service was over. And he goes in, and he starts blasting people. And they had security there, but no one was armed except for this one lady. And she was armed, had a permit to carry, and so forth. And as soon as she got there, she put a bullet in his head. And I don't know where he went, and I don't know how many Christians died. The same thing happened to a church up in Maine, I think. And there was nobody there with a weapon. I mean, this is another thing. Let's say we catch them. You know, he's killed all these people. Then we put him in jail. Do you know how many appeals they get in this country?
Well, yeah. I mean, even if he was sentenced to death, it could go on for year after year after year after year after year before there'd actually be a carrying out of the death penalty.
Oh, yeah, they get seven appeals. In the meantime, we feed them, we clothe them, we shower them.
So what's your take, Harry? I mean, what should we do?
What should we do?
Yeah.
I think we need to get back to the Constitution. I think that we should be able to, you know, have a right to carry. That's in our Second Amendment. It's a shame that the country has gotten this way. I think so much of it has to do with the breakdown of the family and with drugs.
So there definitely
has a simple answer.
Right, much bigger issues for sure. I mean, we absolutely agree with that.
Without a doubt.
And these things are reflections
it so
of it.
It's sad. But that's their rule over there. And
Got
that's
it.
The way they run their country.
Right.
But,
I mean, the
know,
interesting thing.
Here,
I'm just going to jump in. The interesting thing, though, is that, of course, their crime rates and violent crime are so much lower than here in America. And that's why I raised the issue. But thank you, sir, for weighing in. I appreciate it. Miguel in Salt Lake City, Utah, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks for putting me on. I just wanted to say God bless you, first of all. And, you know, my dad was born and raised in Spain. I know times were different back then, but if a criminal who killed somebody was caught, they had 3 months to live, and then they were executed. My dad could walk down any dark alley any time of the day or night and not fear for his life. So, I mean, they might have had one, two murders a year, if that. Now, I know that things are different today, and we've got a lot more people and a lot more sin, but I just feel like if you take a life, you should have your life taken. I think that we pity-paddle too much around with these people, and like the last caller said, we shower them, and they have room and board, and they get to watch color TV, and they can brag about it, and then someone writes a book about them, and they become famous. It's sickening.
Yeah. Well, God, hey, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. Look, if I have to lean between strict justice and mercy, you know, Jacob, the second chapter tells us that mercy triumphs over judgment. However, I also understand that justice is a pillar of the human race, of the earth, that without justice, everything crumbles around us. So where is justice in the case of Norway? And again, are we here in America wants to say, well, look at our success rate. Look at what the death penalty and these harsh penalties are doing here. Or you might say, no, that's our whole problem. We don't have harsh penalties. We have an ineffective prison system, and most people are getting in and out. All right, more to talk about. Important issues, though, not just theory, as far as I'm concerned. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for being with us today on the Line of Fire. We're exploring a difficult issue, a controversial issue, and I really want to get your take on it. I do so sometimes, and tell you the truth, I love getting calls. I love interacting with calls. I'm constantly thrilled with the quality of callers that we get. But many times, or some days, I got something on my heart I really want to get out. I really want to share. And I want to spend a good part of the show talking about it. Today, it's kind of the opposite. I've got some thoughts, but I want to hear from as many of you as possible. And here's the subject before us, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. On the one hand, there's outrage over the potential sentence for the murderer in Norway. Let's say he's found sane and guilty of the charges of mass murder, that he could get 21 years in prison. 21 years, 100 days for each of the people he killed, roughly. A Norwegian friend told me that potentially, he could be given a 30-year sentence. And then, of course, the judges can add on more time if they feel he's not safe in society again. But what if it's deemed he is safe to walk about the streets? It's safe for him to do. He's not a threat to anyone anymore. But isn't that an outrage, though, to the families and to others that he's walking the streets? He keeps his life intact. In my opinion, if you take a life, you forfeit a life. Either capital punishment or life in prison without parole if we're not certain that the person is guilty, or if we feel certain but we have an imperfect justice system, or if we still want to extend mercy in the midst of it and give this person opportunity to get right with God, you still forfeit your life. So you're no longer a free person. You take a life, you lose your life, either capital punishment or life in prison without parole. The problem is that here in America, we have harsher penalties than Denmark, but we've got a ton more crime, a ton more violent crime. Are we the ones to tell them that their system is not working? Look at our system. Look at the success of our system. Is that right? What's your take on that? 866-34-TRUTH. And then one other issue, and if you've listened to me over a period of time, you know I'm not a gun control, guns either. You know, we should have guns, we shouldn't have guns. It's just not an issue to me, okay? It's not a personal issue. It's nothing I ever think about. One of my sons-in-law is a hunter, and you know, my wife and I will chat with him, and you know, he's grown up with guns. He grew up, you know, farm life and hunting, and so that's just part of his culture. And he'd be the first to tell you grew up with it, and the last thing you're going to do is become a violent criminal, because it's just part of life and culture. You know how to use these things properly, but we do have much more of a gun culture here in America. And people said, look, in Norway, if you just had a couple people that had concealed weapons on that island, it's just normal when you have a group of people, you're going to have at least some who are carrying, that for sure, this guy would have been taken out and it would have spared many, many lives. But then again, are we the ones to lecture the Norwegians? Are we the ones to tell the Norwegians, hey, look at our culture, because we have a far more violent culture? And I know these are controversial issues. And we're going to have gun control advocates and advocates of everyone being armed and so on both sides, which is why I raised the issue. So in short, a few questions. Capital punishment in general, is that a right thing? Is it scriptural? Genesis, the 9th chapter, whoever takes man's life loses it, right? Whoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, because human beings are created in the image of God. And hence, to honor the importance of human life, if you take a life, you lose a life. Is that our right position? Has it helped us in America reduce crime? Are we not carrying it out properly? Can we teach the Norwegians? Should we be learning from the Norwegians? And what about guns? Is that the problem in Norway? Not enough people carrying guns, hence the atrocity? Or was something like this so unbelievably rare because they don't have a gun culture there? Oh, yeah. We've got lots of questions. Look, Friday you get to ask me questions. Today I'm getting to ask you questions. 866-34-TRUTH. I'd love to hear from you today. Back with your calls.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, folks, I want to get to as many of your calls as possible. So as the phone lines are jammed, keep trying to get through because I want to hear from as many of you as possible. And when I go to the phones, I just want to ask you to be as clear and concise as possible, okay? This way we can hear from as many of you as we can about death penalty, about the penal system in Norway, about the issue of guns, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, tomorrow our focus is going to be on messianic prophecy. And yesterday we were talking about persecution and evangelism. We cover a lot of ground here on the Line of Fire. I hope that makes for interesting listening as well as edifying, life-changing listening. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's start with Diane in Tampa. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Dr. Brown. On the talk show today about the guns and everything, I feel that God is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. And I know back in the Old Testament, if you took a life, then your life was taken. I believe that if they know without a shadow of a doubt, and a person even says that they did something like that, I believe that their life should be taken. But if there's any doubt whatsoever, I believe that they should hold them for a certain amount of time, and yes, have mercy, let them go. If they commit another crime according to what they have already committed, mm-hmm. I believe then their life should be taken. But if we are overloaded with men in prisons now that have not committed such crimes as that, but I believe that instead of holding them in jail and causing our prices to rise up high of what we do for them, used 2 years ago in our own country, a lot of men were given the rights to either go to jail and stay there or join the service. And I believe a lot of men would have a lot of mercy given to them and even shown to them because they have to carry a Bible around in their pocket, and they do get to read. And if they are sent into battle, then they would actually know what it is to not only be fought at, but to fight back. And that's my take on the word today.
All right. Thanks, Diane. I appreciate you weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. Richard in St. Petersburg, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I believe in the Torah, where it mentions the reason for capital punishment is that so that all may see and fear. It's not that a lot of people figure it's you're punishing. It's not for a purpose of punishing, but to, in a sense, it is punishment, but it's actually more to give society an idea of what it is when you take somebody's life, you know. Because life is precious, like the Bible says, you know. But
it's certainly a warning. Others will see and fear is part of the reason for it. And then also, right, underscoring the value of a human life. Yep, absolutely. Thank you for calling. 866-34-TRUTH. Steve in Mount Airy, North Carolina. And to be clear, this would be the case before us with the murderer in Norway is 21-year total sentence based on the current laws, not per murder. It would be basically 100 days per person killed if you compute it to 21 years. But the sentence, the basic sentence that they're talking about is 21 years. Unless he was considered to be a threat, then the judges could keep him behind bars longer. But I saw that was part of your question, Steve. But go for it, sir.
Yeah, I think that even if you don't believe in capital murder, capital punishment by death penalty, it should be 21 years per murder that he committed, and that should be carried out at least in a consecutive term, because if you just have it bundled up as one sentence, mm-hmm. you're showing disrespect for each one of the individual families.
I think so. I feel the same way. Again, the idea is not personal vengeance, but there is justice. There is the dignity of that human life. I mean, come on, let's think of it. A guy murders a whole family, you know, men, women, and children, you know, mom, dad, and kids, you know, abuses them, then murders them, burns the house down, and then get, just theoretically, 10 years in prison. What a complete dishonoring of that family and those individuals and human life. And that's another thing we have to factor in, not just the effect on the criminal and not just the question of justice, but the dignity of the lives taken. Thank you for weighing in, Steve. I appreciate it. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Kevin in Philadelphia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I completely believe in capital punishment. Again, God the Father actually carried out capital punishment on his son for our sins. So I 100% believe in capital punishment. The thing is, I can't go off of what I believe. I got to go off of what I'm told. I'm not my own anymore, being of the Christian faith, and that is to love. So now I have to try and to distinguish what is love. Now, of course, we have to look to God the Father to understand what is love through his instances and how he expressed it towards us. So, you know, that's my take on capital punishment. But whenever we, I don't believe we can insert some of the Old Testament laws without them all, because then that gives the secular world an avenue to then critique and attack our Christian faith without knowing the whole thing.
So in other words, if we just say, hey, the Old Testament says this, well, then are we burning witches? Are we stoning disobedient teenagers? Are we stoning people who don't keep the Sabbath? Right. I'm absolutely not advocating just the wholesale taking of Old Testament law and applying it, but there are principles. When I find the key principle of justice, that's what I'm trying to look for.
Yes. Giving us a new commandment, the new commandment then negates the old commandment, and that is to love. So now I believe that we have to then have a constitution, have laws based on love of God and through God's inspiration and expression.
So how would that work out then? Say as far as a murderer.
I'll give you a prime example. if this guy here, all the people, I believe the number is down into the 70s of the people that he killed. Completely
76.
Ridiculous.
76.
You know, I think it's very, very touching. Of the world and things like that. But then we have to then, okay, cool, what would God do with this person? And then trying to understand what would God do. I believe there's much prayer. I believe there's much, there has to be some fasting going on before we can make a clear and decisive.
But how can we, you can't operate a country based on that. You have to have laws. And America is not, we're not a theocracy. It's not like the church, you know, that Jesus
is
really.
Tell people what to do.
Right. So, in other words, we still have to have laws in place, and those laws have to be based on justice, and love and justice go hand in hand. But, hey, Kevin, thanks for raising a bunch of important issues that we sift through as Christians, as followers of Jesus. 866-34-TRUTH. Kathy in Salt Lake City, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, hi. I believe that as a Christian, we should consider the fact that God might have a destination for him in their prison, and that death penalty should not be an option for anybody due to the fact that it's not our place necessarily to judge somebody or to kill somebody. If God believes that.
Let me just ask you a question. I don't mean to cut you off, but this is very important to me. When you say it's not our job to judge someone, isn't that what judges in the justice system are there to do, to say who's guilty and who's not guilty? I mean, isn't that a God-ordained role in society? Otherwise, we have pure chaos.
I think that as human beings, we all, even the judges, make mistakes numerously, a lot more than we give them credit for, and if Norway is having a lot less crime and things going on there, and they're carrying around less guns and everything than America, we should learn from them.
But you're right. But I just want to press this point that our society, our legal system, our courts shouldn't make judgments. I mean, that is kind of a baffling statement to me. I don't mean to be disrespectful to you, but that's a very baffling position, because it's being judgmental is a wrong thing, or condemning wrongly is the wrong thing. But Jesus says in John 7:24, don't judge by outward appearance, but make righteous judgments. So making righteous judgments is very, very important and part of the foundation of society.
I think most people make an outward judgment, and instead of making judgments and punishing people, we should do more teaching.
Oh, look, I'm all for instructing. I'm all for rehabilitating. I'm all for trying to work within the prisons to get people back on the right path. But justice, you do your very best to come to a fair and righteous decision, and that's a pillar of humanity. We'll be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
For those just turning in, earlier today I did an interview with John Henry Weston of LifeSiteNews.com. He's based in Canada. Enlightening interview. You can catch it by going to our website at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. And you'll be amazed to hear what's happened in Canada already and the message for us here in America. Okay, we're talking about capital punishment, penal system, Norway, guns, things like that. 866-34-TRUTH. A lot of different takes on this. Just remember, we're talking about national policy, not just what we do in church. Tom in Salt Lake City, thanks for calling today.
Yes, I think that I don't have guns, but I think the guns are necessary in our society. In a lot of ways.
All right, so an obvious question. We have a lot more violence in our culture in America than Norway. We have a lot more guns. Do you think the guns cut down on violence here or create some of the violence? Or is it the standard thing, if you outlaw guns, the only ones to have guns would be outlaws?
That's pretty much true, is that if you outlaw guns, they'd have guns. But as we go rapidly decrease, and if you look at the Bible, if you believe that we're heading to a totalitarian dictatorship in America, then like in other countries, if they took away the guns, it'd be easier for them to establish that totalitarian dictatorship.
All right,
here
so just the right to carry arms here in America preserves our freedom. And other countries lose it. All right. Hey, thanks for weighing in. That's why the phone lines are wide open. Tracy in Denver, Colorado, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, I would like to share Romans 13 quickly with you, Dr. Brown. And that is verse 3, rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. And skip to verse 4, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. If thou do that which is evil, be afraid. He bears not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. And the government is supposed to, you know, ensure the safety, the protection of the public, and they're not to be terrorized by evil. And so that's the place for the government to take swift and strong action. Again.
Right, and that's a New Testament perspective, and it mentions bearing the sword, which means carrying out serious penalties for infraction of the law. Hey, thanks for reading the scripture to us. Of course, it's totally relevant. Chester in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, thanks for calling.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I think that...
You need to turn your radio down in the back there, okay? So turn your radio down, and let's try this again. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I think that the guns in Norway that's one of the rare times because Norway is a peaceful country. So that is just one of the most random occurrences I've ever heard of Norway because I've done a paper on Norway before in my classes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a total shock to the nation. Like they said, these things just don't happen there. So you're saying more guns is not what they need because this is just totally contrary to who they are.
Yes, I mean, and it says if you take the life of humans, you also will lose yours.
you already owe God if you killed 75 people. You can't take God 75 lives back. This isn't no Nintendo Wii game, but you
got
do
it.
Owe a substantial amount. Because
right.
You destroyed families, wrecked
yeah.
relationships. And
massive damage that'll last for a lifetime of the survivors. Absolutely right. So in your mind, that person then forfeits their right to live. Hey, Chester, thanks for weighing in. I appreciate it, man. Appreciate that. Let's see. Tim in Philadelphia, we're a little short of time, so please dive right in.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I just want to say I've been listening to you for a few months. Very thought-provoking. You have a great program. I really appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you.
As a Christian, I feel, yes, we need to reach out and love to others, and we need to forgive. But as a democratic society, we cannot just give a pass to those who commit crimes against people. I believe in capital punishment as long as we have a definite proof of and not maybe not type situation, but a
mm-hmm.
definite proof of, I think that person that has premeditated and committed murder has forfeited his should forfeit his life.
Right. So the principles, hey, we love people, we're not judgmental. This is talking about interpersonal dealings and reaching
exactly.
out with the love of God. But when you're talking about justice, there is justice, and without justice, we have anarchy and chaos. Hey, thanks for weighing in. I appreciate it. Grace in Denver, we're real short on time, so just weigh in quickly, please. Thank you. Hello?
Yes. I think I'm on the air. I'm not sure.
You are on the air, Grace, and
okay.
we need you to get right to your point.
Okay. The Old Testament and the New Testament, the Ten Commandments are exactly the same. It doesn't change it to two commandments. It's still the Ten Commandments. And I think if someone takes someone's life, I think their life should be taken as well, because as we are children and we've grown up, our consequences get stronger and stronger and stronger every time we do an evil. And when someone goes and kills, that is not a mistake. That life should be taken, a life for a life as well.
And do you feel that,
and that's
life,
still loving
that life
them.
For
it's
life?
Still loving them, because we spank our children when we love them, but we're trying to teach them, you know, the evils not to do something, so there are consequences, and that's what teaches.
Right.
But now in this country, we don't have consequences. China is not as violent as here, because China has consequences. Here we're wishy-washy. We pick and choose who gets life and who gets, death row and who doesn't. I mean, there's no consequences. I've seen them so many times. Slap them on the hand, they go right back out.
Yeah, you read about somebody, say, who is back out on the street. They killed somebody, and they're back out on the street like 8 years later or something like that. So, yeah, there is a tremendous mix in the penal system here. Hey, Grace, thank you for weighing in. All right, we are out of time, but thank you for the calls. Thank you for your viewpoints. Think about these things. Give thought as Americans as to what's right and wrong with our system, our culture. Give thought to other cultures that we're looking at and what we can learn from them and what we can teach them, and just keep thinking about these issues. Can I encourage you to let folks know about the broadcast? Some of your areas we've only been on for, 6 months or something like that, or 5 months, some areas for several years. That doesn't mean everybody knows about the show. So let them know. Encourage them to tune in and listen. Remember, any shows you miss, you can catch online at askdrbrown.org. Please do pray for us. We are, by God's grace, on the front lines and a whole bunch of important fronts doing work that would bring joy to your heart. And it brings joy to the hearts of our torchbearers every week, those who support the ministry with $25 or more per month and get a new CD from us and a letter with updates and free access to our online classes and other benefits. You share in the reward of the fruit of this broadcast and worldwide ministry every day. If you can stand with us, give us a call at 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line, as I look again at the massacre in Norway, we must recognize the uniqueness and the beauty and the dignity of every human life. We must recognize that human beings alone are created in the image of God. And we must get God's heart for the importance of every human life being in harmony with Him, not being destroyed, not taken out before their time, but coming to know Him and glorify Him. That's why we were made.